The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, Michael McDougall, the former Justice Minister and Attorney General, former leader of the Progressive Democrats, has made a television documentary that's been broadcast tonight on RT1, 10:15, made with Niamh Salmon. It's called Rome versus Republic. What do you mean by that, Michael?
Well, it's the purpose of the documentary is to examine the interaction between the Catholic Church, and which is Rome, and the Irish Republican separatist idea, and to see over two centuries, you know, precisely what each side was doing, and also looking at how the Catholic Church came to be so dominant in Irish society across the second half of the 19th century and into the 20th century.
Yeah, that's interesting because you, over two centuries, why did you pick that time frame?
Well, I mean, if you go back to republicanism, you could start, I suppose, with at the time of the Puritans and Oliver Cromwell. But I mean, I took as the start point Wolfe Tone and the United Irishmen. And,
of 1798.
1798. And, you know, they were the, you know, Pierce up at the graveside of O'Donovan Ross said that he wanted to build the Republic of Tone and Davis, both of whom were Protestants. And yet, you know, the Republic that we eventually got was a very Catholic and quite a sectarian state.
Of course, that's when you're from the 1920s onwards. But what's fascinating is that you posit almost a conspiracy between the Catholic Church and the British Crown to take control of Ireland.
Well, they had a joint interest. I mean, the Pope was running the Papal States. He was a monarch at the close of the 18th century. He was absolutely horrified by what Napoleon was doing to the Church. The Catholic Church was very anti-republican and very pro the established monarch's rights being kept there. And that, if that meant supporting the English monarchy, so be it. And in the late 18th century, they were deeply scared of French republicanism and the Enlightenment and republican ideals. And it turns out, as the programme will show, and don't think it's a great spoiler to say it, that the Archbishop of Dublin, John Troy, actually wrote to the Lord Lieutenant and said that if he wanted to keep out seditious priests in Ireland, he would fund a seminary at Maynooth. So Maynooth was set up effectively with British government money and British government funding and a degree of British government control.
You also argue in the documentary that the famine was also seminal for actually allowing the Catholic Church to take more control of those who survived it.
Well, it's a peculiar feature of the demographics of Ireland changed hugely. I mean, prior to the famine, there was this huge population which had grown from around 4 million in the late years of the 18th century to about 8 million by the middle of the 19th century. And the famine absolutely decimated that population. And it also, it did what the Highland clearances did in Scotland. It cleared a huge mass of landless peasants or people with a tiny plot of land out of Irish society and re-established the foundations of Irish society as an agricultural society with small farmers. And that society was much more potent from the church's point of view. They were you know, they had some economic clout. They could contribute to the building of churches, and it suited the church really that Irish society became much less a peasantry and more a small farming society.
But in the absence of, I suppose you could say, self-determination, given that the Act of Union applied at that stage, did that effectively form the roots for the Catholic Church taking control of Irish society?
Well, I mean, it's very interesting. The Catholic, the man who reconstructed Catholicism in Ireland was Cardinal Paul Cullen, and he came from Rome and, as you'll see in the programme, found the Catholic Church in a poor state. And it had been on its knees in at the time of Wolfe Tone. You know, it was very, very primitive. The Catholic Church was, you know, there was one priest for every 4,000 people, and that meant that there weren't churches, there weren't mass going, there weren't confessionals, there was nothing like that. Irish Catholicism for the great mass of the people was a very primitive thing.
And sort of almost like a superstition with the fairies and things in with a degree of Catholicism.
Well, they knew they were Catholics and they went to Mass at Mass Rocks and at various different locations, but from time to time. But there was no such thing as regular Mass or whatever like that. And holy wells and things like that, they were part of their religion too. And Cullen came to change that dramatically. And he himself was very, very anti-Home Rule. He feared a native parliament, he said, would be much more hostile to church interests.
We'll then jump forward to the 20th century and when we did get our own state after the War of Independence. And it became, to many people, a very Catholic state, particularly because of the grip that the Catholic Church took over education and health in particular. And I think you argue that this is boiled down to economic reasons. The state simply couldn't afford to do it. The church stepped in.
Well, you see, if you look back to the 19th century, from about 1870, 1880 onwards, the Catholic Church was building all of this social infrastructure, hospitals, schools, orphanages, you name it, they were building it. And when the new state was founded, a lot of the social infrastructure was in the hands of the Catholic Church already. And the Civil War and all of that period, Ireland was not in a position to say, sorry, we'll have our own education system and say thank you, good night to the church. And therefore the church really inherited, or the Irish Free State emerged in circumstances where the church was the controller of a huge amount of social infrastructure in Ireland. And when Edward Byrne, the Archbishop of Dublin, gave way to John Charles McQuaid, the high point of Catholic dominance and power in Ireland came on in the early years of McQuaid's reign as Archbishop of Dublin.
So in your opinion, how did the church start losing its power? Because a lot of people put it down to the impact of the child abuse scandals, the paedophilia, which has defiled the church as much as anything else. But was it down to actually perhaps a better educated people, perhaps even from the fact that when free second level education came in the 1960s, that a better educated people started rejecting this control that the Catholic Church was imposing upon them?
Well, that's a point that Donoghue Coran deals with in the programme. I mean, apparently the year that free education became available, vocations to the priesthood slumped. And people were going into the diocesan colleges to get an education. Now, that's one side of the story, but it's not the entire story. I mean, the 1960s in Quebec and Canada had seen the Catholic Church practice go down from 80% to 20%. The years of the... You have to factor in as well, and Mary McAleese will be talking about this on the programme, the effect of Humanae Vitae and contraception and the Church's position on that.
But just explain that to people who may not be familiar.
Yeah, well, I mean, since the 1930s, the church had condemned absolutely artificial contraception, and the Irish Free State had made it unlawful and a crime to import contraceptives or to sell them. And that position obtained right up until the 1980s. You know, in 1979, Charles Haughey, some people forget this, he introduced as a liberalisation measure that married couples only could use condoms if they got a prescription from a doctor. I mean, and that was 1979. So, I mean,
beggars belief, doesn't it?
It does indeed. You know, at that stage, I was 28 years of age. So, I mean, these are recent events in my mind. There was a huge expectation post Vatican II, the Second Vatican Council, that the church would come to grips with the birth control issue and reverse its 1930s position, but it didn't do it. And that that moment, once that happened, there was a huge loss of moral authority among the faithful.
There's something else from more recent, from the 21st century, which is of real interest to me, given that you were the Attorney General, I think, at the time.
Mm.
And that was the deal, the settlement deal that was done between the state and the Catholic Church for redress for the wrongs done by the Catholic Church in this country during the 20th century. And it was done almost in a cloud of mystery and at great speed, I think, wasn't it, just before the 2002 general election?
Well, RTE ran documentaries on the subject of the abuse of children in state institutions, residential institutions. And the... When I say state institutions, they were church-run institutions, the financing of which the state undertook, and to which courts and social services would send children to be looked after by religious.
And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of children.
We're talking about 170,000 in the lifetime of the Irish independent independent Irish state.
Shocking number.
Well, it's a huge number, yeah. But it's, I mean, on the other hand, Matt, before we get carried away, you know. Ireland was a very poor society. I remember in the 1950s, not far from here in York Street, in the summer, the kids had no shoes. You know, I mean, it was a very different society.
But the settlement that was agreed at the time.
Yeah.
And were you at that time suspicious of what was going on, the speed at which it was done, whether there was people perhaps working on behalf of the state who were as interested in protecting the Catholic Church as they were in representing the state?
Well, my concern, and it would have been the concern, I think, of the entire cabinet, was to contain the cost to the Exchequer of making redress to the victims of residential institution abuse. A deal was done with the Catholic Church that they would contribute a half of an estimated bill of at the time of 250 million, but they were allowed to cap their contribution at 126 million, whereas the actual bill to the state, when all the redress tribunals were set up and the system of compensation was put in place, well, it came to about one and a half billion. So effectively, the religious orders got away with paying 10%, less than 10% of the bill.
And did they even pay that full 10%?
Well, they did pay that eventually, but they agreed to increase it. And the increase was to come in the form of donating things like football pitches to the state. But, I mean, the state and also counselling services and things like that. The second tranche really was a bit illusory. And in any event, for the state to be given, say, recreational grounds by the Catholic Church really wasn't much reparation, because the state couldn't close them down and start building on them or do something like that with them. So they effectively, it was just a giving over control of a social amenity.
And yet we also have a situation where now we're having rows going on about the divestment of school patronage, that it seems that people can't organise themselves well enough to actually take control of a lot of these schools back from
the
Catholic Church.
Well, the whole process is very complicated. I mean, I think last week it became very clear that parents of kids in primary schools don't like being told halfway through their child's education that there's going to be a revolution in the school and that it's suddenly going to change its direction. And I think all of that was inflamed by some letters that were sent out by management of some of the schools who were anxious to keep the status quo. But in the end, the church still, in a vestigial way, controls the great bulk of primary education in Ireland and a huge section of secondary education. And a lot of parents are quite content with that. They're not gagging to have secular education. But if you look at the census, the last census, you know, I think there's over 300,000 people have said that they have no religion. And there must be a limit to how long they are going to tolerate, the only education being available to them being Catholic education.
The programme is called Rome versus Republic. It'll be broadcast on RT1 at 10:15 this evening. Michael McDill, thank you very much for joining
us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.